To another top-rated show on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Welcome to the American Hour with your host, Commander Tom Garcia, on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Good afternoon, and I am Tom Garcia, your host today for the American Hour on the USA Talk Radio Network. Thanks for joining us. We've got a very special guest today, Franz Cabreau. If you've seen the press release that I put out and the information, then you'll know a little bit about Franz. But Franz is what I consider one of, if not the most influential conservatives in Florida. He's well-known in Central Florida. He's definitely an activist and been involved in a lot of different activities. And, as well, he has worked as communications director on my campaign early on in my congressional campaign. So, in any case, I'm not going to waste any more time introducing him. We're going to get right to him. He's on the phone now. I'm going to bring him on. Franz, how are you doing today?
Doing great, Tom. Thank you very much.
Hey, thanks for coming on the show today. I know that you're going to be traveling today. Where are you right now?
I am on the going up to Fort Walton Beach, Florida. I'm doing a Constitution and Liberty Conference tomorrow as the keynote speaker, and then I'll be up in Milton, Florida at the Santa Rosa Tea Party on Monday evening.
Awesome. All right. Well, let's introduce you. Tell us who you are, a little bit about yourself. I've already told people that you're a naval aviator like myself, airline pilot, but tell us a few other things, and then we'll tell people where they can connect with you on Facebook, your webpage, and then we'll do a little more promotion of some other things as well. So tell us who you are.
Sure, absolutely. Now, a little bit on my background. I started off with my grandfather back in 1957 being the president of Haiti. He took the country over in a coup. Back then, organized elections and then basically stepped down and was head of the military for a bit of time. Then he became ambassador to the Vatican. My parents came over here from Haiti in 1964 and since have become U.S. citizens, and I'm very proud of that. I was born in Washington, D.C., attended University of Maryland, graduated with a degree in political science, politics, and government, and then joined the Navy, much like you did, obviously. And then had a great time in the Navy. Flew for 10 years. I was a S3 pilot out in Natsuki, Japan. Met my wife out there. Then joined the airlines in 2000. Been attached to United Airlines since 2000. But in August of 2009, that's around the same time that you and I got together. And but it's the same time that Joe Wilson said to Barack Obama at the joint session of Congress, "You lie." And then that's when I said I need to get off the couch. I need to start doing something because I've already been tired about with Barack Obama getting elected because I knew that he was a socialist. Now I got to do something about it. And that's when I joined your campaign. We went around quite a bit to a lot of different places in a short period of time. And then in January of 2010, I was approached by Lloyd Marcus and Walt Metzler to be the national director for the NAACPC, the National Association for the Advancement of Conservative People of All Colors. And since that time, we've been promoting a message of ending identity politics and creating a colorblind society. And I use what I call stolen history, information that's been taken out of the history books to perpetuate a model of the United States of America that's not really true. Our kids today are learning that, you know, literally learning today that socialism isn't so bad and communism might not be so bad. And they're not learning how important the Declaration of Independence is, how important the Constitution is, to be not only the freedoms that we enjoy here in the United States of America, but to be the example to the rest of the world of how freedom is supposed to be enjoyed and promoted.
Excellent. Well, listen, now we're going to talk about some night aircraft carrier landings here in a few minutes, but how can people get a hold of you? Where can they find you on the Internet?
Yeah, you can find me at franzcabreau.com, FranzKebreau, B as in boy, REAU, franzcabreau.com. Or stolenhistory.com, you can link over to that also, and NAACPC.org, it'll send you over there. Now, if you go to franzcabreau.com, you can also link over both to my my YouTube page and my Facebook page. And I'm at 5,000 now, so you have to go over to my fan page and try to get some information over there. But that's how you can get in touch with me. And especially at FoxGamora.com, I thoroughly enjoy getting out to places and talking to different groups about this issue, because I think it's going to be, it can definitely be a turning, the turning point or the game changer for getting people, what they call, quote-unquote, minorities, over to our cause, the conservative cause.
That's great. Well, listen, explain to people who Lloyd Marcus is, because you mentioned his name a few times, and tell people who he is and what he's up to.
Yeah, Lloyd Marcus is a singer. He's a singer and an entertainer. He's the one who came up with the original Tea Party anthem that the Tea Party Express was using as they traveled the country. I think they've been on 3 or 4 tours now. And so, yeah, and also, obviously, he travels with the Tea Party Express. Great guy up in DeLand, Florida, and he likes to say that he is not a hyphenated American. He is just an American.
All right. Well, that's good. Now, do you have a Twitter account?
I do. I just started a Twitter account. Right now, we are things are ratcheting up so much for me that I decided that I'm going to get on the Twitter and I'm going to start getting people to join up on that. So I would hold off on announcing, but you can probably find me on Twitter just by typing in my name. That account is going to start up heavy, hot and heavy, because I've got so many events this month that I want people to be informed as to what's going on. Also, this summer, we're doing a Northeast tour through Delaware, New Jersey, New York, Maryland, Washington, D.C., and Pennsylvania. And I want to keep people up to date as to what's going on while I'm up there.
All right, very good. Well, we're going to talk about the military here for a minute. We'll get serious first, and then we'll talk about night carrier landings, which I know is serious business, but we're all done with that, so we can laugh about it now. but, you know, at the beginning of the week, I started telling my listeners that I had some inside information that John Boehner, as Speaker of the House, was going to propose to the rest of the Republicans to one more continuing resolution, but the real thrust of that resolution was not so much to keep the government going for a week, but to keep our military personnel paid through the end of the year. Now, I can't remember if you were in the military at the time. I don't think you were yet. You were a little younger than me. In 84, I didn't get paid for a month because of President Reagan vetoing the Democrats' budget. So it just happened to come right before payday, and so I didn't get paid till the next month. So, I mean, you know, I got paid. I got the money, but I had to go a month without that particular pay. And now that the Democrats are saying they don't want to play along with this continuing resolution to take care of our troops, what they are actually saying is, well, it's got some cuts to abortion funding in it. And so the president is saying just because of that, he's going to veto it. So we see where his priorities are. He is very concerned about killing babies, but he's not concerned about paying our troops. What do you think of that?
No, that's exactly what it sounds like. I mean, that's the most ridiculous thing that I've ever heard. We've got our troops in harm's way right now defending freedoms all across the world, and he doesn't want to pay, he doesn't want to give them what they are actually due, but instead he's going to veto a bill because it's okay to go ahead and kill an unborn child. That doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever. The priorities, like you said, Tom, are absolutely backwards. I almost used a Navy term there. His priorities are absolutely backwards, and it makes no sense. But, you know, this is par for the course for Barack Obama and the Democrats. They've got this whole system completely backwards as to what's important for the United States of America and what is not.
Yeah, you know, it seems to me like every time they come out with some new policy idea or something that they want to do, it's the worst thing for the United States of America, and the things that they always oppose are the best things for the United States of America. Like, say, for example, following the Constitution. I think that's good for the United States of America. They always want to figure out a way around it.
They don't even want to read the darn thing. I mean, it is the basis for our republic, and they don't even want to read it. That's ridiculous. The more we go along this road, this Democratic Party road that they've designed for us, Barack Obama and Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi, the more idiotic it starts to become. You start to realize that, you know, you've probably felt the same thing, that we had a great awakening here in the last couple of years. But as we become more awake, we realize how much we actually have been missing out on in the last 20 or 30 years, the fact that we haven't paid attention to the Constitution in the last 20 or 30 years. Now their views, their actions become more and more idiotic with the backdrop that the Constitution is the most important thing to our republic.
Yeah, well, they really don't like it because it's a huge impediment to their agenda. And we'll come back to the Constitution in a few minutes because I want to talk some more about that. But Rush Limbaugh had an interesting observation today. He said – is it that the liberals are killing with their, you know, their favor of abortion and wanting to promote and cover the cost of abortion? Who is it that is actually dying? And he said,
yeah, liberals.
They're killing themselves.
Yeah.
So eventually, if you blow this out long enough, if they were to have their way, eventually there wouldn't be any of them left. I don't think that's a good reason to support abortion, but, you know, so
yeah,
people like...
Yeah, exactly. I heard that comment today. I thought that was probably, that was kind of funny and sad at the same time, extremely sad at the same time. Now, the problem is they'll continue to get those that they do not consider minorities to go along with their policies for what they consider to be altruistic reasons. So they'll start to gain more numbers. The white guilt party will start to gain more numbers. And also, obviously, he did mention this, they'll just bring in people from south of the border and to fill in those numbers. But the issue of abortion is not so much that the Democrats, I don't think that they themselves want to, quote-unquote, kill black people. It's that the abortion lobby has such a power grab, such a hold on the Democratic Party, that they will not let them loose, even if they wanted to let the issue of abortion go. So it's the abortion lobby that is at fault here. It's the Democrats that are basically supporting the abortion lobby that is that's getting these policies put in place so that we can't stop abortions.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm looking at the cover of your book, and you really, I tell you, you really hit a home run with this thing, and what you said applies to so many things in life. But on the cover of the book, it says, "Revealing the truth to unite America," and then I love the next part. "We won't recognize true freedom until we know our true history. We've got to know," and now these are my words, "if you don't know where you came from, how do you know where you need to go?" And I think that's a great, title, it's not the title of the book, but it's right on the cover of the book. So tell us a little bit about your book, Stolen History, and how you decided to write that book and arrived at that time.
Yeah, it was definitely an evolution. Back in about 7-8 years ago, somebody had told me that Martin Luther King Jr. was a Republican, and at the time I was a liberal Democrat. And I said, there's no way, that can't be true. But just like I'm a type A, probably like you are, Tom, and I said, but I got to figure out if they're telling me the truth. So I went and did the research, and I found out that it was true. And when I realized that this is basic, this should be absolutely basic information that all the public should know, I didn't know. And the fact that, just like you, tons of carrier landings had led men all across the world, and I thought that I was an educated individual, did not know this basic information. I said, well, let me go research some more and see if there's anything else I don't know or if there's anything else that they did not tell me. And then when I realized how profound, how vast the quote-unquote conspiracy of taking out information from history books had been, that's when I started to gather all this information. And when I mentioned Joe Wilson in August of 2009, that's when I started to try to figure out a way to get this information out. So that's when I started connecting with the Tea Party and saying, you guys got to hear this information. And the Republicans, by the way, you got to hear this information. So I started sharing this in seminars, in presentations. Originally, the presentations were quite long, probably like 2.5 hours long, almost 3 hours long, and I was putting people to sleep with them. But eventually, because the information is just so vast, I had so much stuff that I wanted to tell people. Well, eventually somebody said, well, why don't you write a book? And I said, well, you know, I've never written a book before. And they said, well, just all you got to do is regurgitate the information that you have in your head back out into the book. When I decided to write the book, one of the things that I was very cognizant of is that I didn't want people to fall asleep when they were reading the book. I wanted to make sure that you get to the facts right away, you get the information right away, and then you can go share that information with as many people as possible. Too many books that I've read, and I love reading, by the way, I love reading, but too many books that I've read take about 10 pages to get to the point, and I said I didn't want to do that. So it's a very, very fast read. Most people get it done very quickly, but it's chock full of information for everybody to understand about what they've been doing to our history books, and also how they've been kind of crumbling at the foundation of the United States of America.
I absolutely agree with that. Let me let people know what the number they can call in if somebody does want to call in. The number is 310-982-4145. We're talking with Franz Cabreau. You can find out more about Franz get a hold of his book. I highly recommend it. Go to franzgebro.com. You can also go to stolenhistory.com. I think that's what you said. Look for Franz on Facebook, and he's just gearing up on Twitter. So if you do a search for Franz Gebro on Twitter, you should find him there and help him pump his numbers up. I keep talking about this carrier landing stuff. Now, when you were in the Navy and a carrier pilot, naval aviator, you got some awards, and you earned those awards, some different awards for your flying ability. Tell us about a couple of those awards.
Yeah, sure. I was top hook out of my out of the RAG squadron, the Reserve Air Group squadron, before I went out to Japan, which got me the choice to go out to Japan and fly, which basically means I was a top carrier pilot during the qualifications, and also I was the number one pilot at that squadron. Then when I went to VS-21 out in Sea Control Squadron 21 out in Japan, I was eventually named Pilot of the Year for that squadron, also Landing Signals Officer of the Year for that squadron. It was great. Eventually, because of that, I was named the Pilot of for the Fleet, for the S3 Bravo Fleet, for the Pacific Fleet, for the 7th Fleet, I'm sorry. And yeah, it's great. I love the titles and everything, but man, I love carrier landing. Except for at night, by the way, but I love landing on my carrier.
Okay. Well, you know, I was no top hook like you, but I had my second crew was a 100% boarding rate at night. I did not like going around, even at the daytime. Definitely at night.
I agree.
Now, I didn't have the best grade, so I didn't win any awards for that. But I had a 100% boarding rate, and there were guys that were down in, what do we call it, what was it, CIC or whatever, that would be handling, marking up the board for the folks down there in strike to know who was coming in and who was landing next. I was down there one night working, and the guy that was listening on the radio and marking who was coming down, he had an assistant with him, said, "Hey, are you Lieutenant Garcia?" And I said, "Yeah." He said, "I've won a lot of money off of you because you never go around at night, and I always bet a new guy in here that hasn't, you know, been here very long, that you'll land the first time, and I always win. So I'm glad I was able to help him win a little bit of money." But explain to me, now you were a landing signal officer, weren't you?
Yeah, I was. I was an LSO, landing signal officer. And basically, landing signals officers are chosen throughout the squadrons. Throughout all the squadrons, they have at least 3 to 4 of them that are the top educators or instructors for laying on the carrier for their particular squadrons. And eventually I became an air wing landing signals officer, which is basically about 6 of us who handle all the squadrons on the ship, about 200 pilots or so. And our responsibility is to make sure that guys, like you said, guys land on the carrier. In the end, they land on the carrier, and they land on the carrier safely. Grades are great. They're fantastic. But the most important thing is that they are safe and that they get on board. What you were doing, Tom, as far as getting on board every single time, especially at night, is fantastic as far as the ship is concerned, because then they don't end up spending a whole lot of gas waiting for you to come back around again. So as far as the Navy is concerned, as far as the ship is concerned, as far as the CAG and all those guys, that's the most important thing, is to get on the ship and get on the ship safely. And that was my charge. That was my duty, is to for not only my squadron but for the air wing, is to make sure we were training guys so that they could fly safely and land safely on the carrier.
Right, right. Well, now let's talk about something a little bit. I said we'd talk about the Constitution. I want to ask your thoughts, and I don't know if this is something you've thought too much about, but I think you're pretty familiar with the 14th Amendment and the purpose that we have of the 14th Amendment. Can you tell people, if you don't want to, I'll do it, but tell people why we have the 14th Amendment.
Well, we got the 14th Amendment. It came out and ratified in 1868. Most people don't know that the vote count for that, because we actually don't talk about it, but 94% of the Republicans voted in affirmative for the 14th Amendment, and not one single Democrat voted for it. But basically, the 14th Amendment was put into place because in 1866, they had originally passed a civil rights law. The Republicans passed a civil rights law that said that you could not discriminate against newly freed slaves after the Civil War, just because of the color of their skin. And they and basically they had the same rights afforded to them that was in the Constitution. Well, the problem was is that people were saying, well, that's not true. They don't have the same rights because we, quote-unquote, do not consider them citizens. So in 1868, they ratified the 14th Amendment, which basically says that that the newly freed slaves could be citizens of the United States of America. Now they're citizens of the United States. You have to recognize them as citizens of the United States, and they're afforded all the rights that every other citizen is afforded. And of course, we get the you get the clause that if you're born here, if you're born naturally here in the United States of America, you're automatically a citizen. But what's interesting also, and you did mention this to me earlier, what's interesting is that they took a bit of a piece of the Fifth Amendment and put it into the 14th Amendment that no person should be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. The caveat that they put in the 14th Amendment is that the federal government says that no state can deprive a person of their rights without due process of law. So that's a little quirk that they put in there, which is a little bit different than the Fifth Amendment, but it pretty much just reiterates what the Fifth Amendment tries to accomplish.
Right. Now, and I agree with all of that, and there certainly was a purpose, obviously, for that. And I think at the time they probably felt like, well, listen, if the Supreme Court is going to rule like this, we want to make sure we don't have to amend the Constitution again if the states start trying to take these matters in their own hands. Because prior to the 14th Amendment, the Bill of Rights didn't apply to the states, only applied to the U.S. federal government, or the federal Congress. And if you look at the First Amendment, it says Congress will make no laws regarding the establishment of religion. It doesn't say government or anybody in the country. It just says Congress. So up to that time, and the reason it said that is because at the time of the Constitution, we had states that did have laws respecting the establishment of government. And that was thought to be protected. They wanted to protect that. So that's why they specified Congress can't interfere in the states and what they're doing. So in today's world, do you think it's a good thing or a bad thing that we've taken the 14th Amendment to now apply what used to only apply to Congress and now broadly apply it to all governments?
Yeah, as far as the 14th Amendment is concerned, well, let me just, in broad terms and specifically about the 14th Amendment, the only thing that I want to make sure of is that when you form the government of the – when the government of the United States of America is formed, and it's based on the principles of the Declaration of Independence and the implementation of the Constitution of the United States of America, that the one thing that is protected is the individual. The individual is protected above all, even above the states. The individual is protected above the states, and I think that was the purpose of what the founding fathers wanted for the Constitution is that to make sure and the Declaration of Independence to make sure that the individual is first and foremost protected, even more important than what the state might want to do. Now, the 14th Amendment, let me just go back. Before the 14th Amendment came along, individuals certainly were not protected by the Constitution or the proclamations by the Declaration of Independence. And the reason I think they put the 14th Amendment in there is to basically hammer home, well, hold on a second, guys. You must take a look at this, at what's happened, what we wanted for the country, and you must respect the rights of all the individuals. And that's why they put the 14th Amendment in. What I'd like to say is that I wish that we would never have had the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment, and that only the Constitution, the original Constitution, would let us stand. Also, with regard to people of color like myself, that they would have respected people of color as individuals, as equal individuals, as the Declaration of Independence had prescribed. The problem is that they did not do that, and so therefore they had to tack on other amendments in order to make that happen. And to me, that's unfortunate. I would rather be an equal citizen to the United States of America as everybody else without those 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments, but unfortunately that's not how it played out.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. Unfortunately, what I see happening with the 14th Amendment is, and this has happened a long, long time ago, but what they've done is they've said, okay, if the Bill of Rights now applies to the states, you've got a situation where, you know, in Arizona, they have a law that says you get a tax break if you contribute to organizations that help provide tuition assistance to private schools. Well, some of these schools are religious schools, so now we've turned it into, oh, no, the government can't get involved in giving tax breaks to religion in any way. Well, this is a state issue, and it's state tax, but no, now we've applied, and this is a process called the incorporation doctrine, by incorporating, and it's interesting how they use the term. It's incorporate against the states. So we've incorporated against the states and basically taken a lot of their sovereignty away with the 14th Amendment, which I don't think was intended at all. But you know how we broadly make these broad, decisions, whether it's the Supreme Court or other courts, about the Constitution. When Alexander Hamilton told us it was absurd to make generalizations about these specific enumerations, and that was never intended, but that's where we are today. We have a Constitution where we've made all kinds of broad, general decisions about the Constitution, has very specific enumerations. So as I understand what happened and why we needed the 14th Amendment, I think it's gotten abused in modern times.
Yeah, I agree with you. I do think it's been abused, especially with those crossing the border and the what do they call the vacation babies or whatever that come over here to visit and have babies just so that they can have their kids that are American citizens. Yeah, it's been absolutely abused. But like I said, I do think that it was necessary at the time because there's no way around that particular issue at the time. I don't think, like you said, that it was intended to be used in the way that it's being used right now. But that's the unfortunate aspect of government and of passing laws. That's why we want limited government. But within that limited government, you must respect the most important aspect of our republic, that is the individual. If we had individuals or people in our government since 1787 that had respected that or could have respected that, and 1791 after the Bill of Rights came out could have respected the individual as individuals, given where they had gotten their rights from God, then we wouldn't be in this place right in this position right now. But unfortunately, as you tack on laws on top of laws, yeah, you start to get the situation that we have now, where you just it's subject to everybody's little interpretation of how it's supposed to be played out.
Yeah, exactly. Well, listen, I'll tell you what. We'll take a short break here, and we'll come back, and you let me know when we come back how long you can stay on the program here. But we're going to take a quick little break. We'll be right back with Franz Cabreau. Go to franzcabreau.com. He's the author of Stolen History. Don't miss the rest of the show. And if you are just now tuning in, you can call in at 310-982-4145, and then you can always stream this or download it through iTunes after the fact if you want to hear the whole show and you're just tuning in. All right, we'll be right back.
National Veterans Homeless Support, or NVHS, was formed by veterans for the sole purpose of locating and assisting the more than 4,500 homeless veterans living in the parks, forests, and streets of Central Florida. Their mission is clearly defined, to eliminate homelessness among veterans in Central Florida, and they work very hard to accomplish this mission. They offer a very unique service to the community in that they are the only organization that goes out into the field, searching for the veterans, providing supplies where they find them, and working with other organizations to get them out of the woods and back into society. If you go to their website, it's located at nvhs.us, and you can also find them on Facebook. Their Veterans Resources link on their webpage is worth its weight in gold, so please go check out the website, and if you're able, make a donation. They do a very, very valuable service to the veterans of Central Florida, and we'd like to expand this and see it expand to the rest of the country.
You're listening to the American Hour with Commander Tom Garcia on the USA Talk Radio Network.
All right, we're back with Franz Cabreau, the most influential conservative and conservative activist in Florida. Glad you could join us, Franz. Again, franzcabreau.com, also stolenhistory.com. Look for him on Facebook, and you've got quite a following growing there. I urge you, yeah, absolutely. I'll tell you after the show how you can really pump your numbers up on Twitter in a reasonable way and actually reach the kind of people that you want to target. So let's see, what else were we going to talk about today? I think I told people that we would talk a little bit about Libya. What are your feelings as a former military guy and a constitutionalist on what we did in Libya?
First off, there are better things that you could have done than launched, 114 missiles into Libya and spent millions upon millions of dollars. Considering what else is going on in the Middle East, the fact that he didn't open his trap to talk about what was going on in Iran last summer, or what probably still is going on in Iran. Now, we are in, 14 trillion dollars right now in debt, 1.5 trillion in our deficit right now, and why are we messing around with Libya? Doesn't make any sense to me. And also, when he decided to do it, he did it basically without, obviously without talking to Congress about it. he had plenty of time to talk to Congress, in, as far as I'm concerned, before launching something like this or doing something like this. I don't think that there's any reason why we should be in Libya. I don't think that we've got other things that we need to take care of. We need to take our too many things here at home than to be over there. Here's the thing, though. Now, once he made the decision to go over into Libya, once he decided to go in there, the problem that I have then is that he handed it off so quickly to basically foreign forces or a commission or a bunch of people that are gonna, you know, citizens, not even military, that will decide what's gonna happen with our forces that are part of NATO. And how I feel is, if you're gonna send our troops in some place, well, you better demand that you're in charge of it. However you're in charge of it, just demand that you're in charge of it, so that you know full well that our troops are going to be safe and somebody else is not going to put them into harm's way. Don't just throw them in there and then turn you back and go play golf.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, I was telling people when they first started talking about going in there to do a no-fly zone, I said, listen, they're going to pick the most expensive and political way to do this, which is a no-kidding no-fly zone, which means you got to take out air defenses, then you got to be flying constantly to keep his forces from flying. Libya has 13 air bases, of which 3 are their primary bases, and I don't even know if the other 10 they can even fly their fighters out of. But
right.
It only took a short time. It was about a week before the rebels had control of the other 10 bases. The 3 main bases are out to the north and west. Now, you know, as well as I know, it would have taken 1, maybe 2 days to completely destroy those bases and all the aircraft on those bases, and there would be your no-fly zone. We would never have to fly again there, at least not in the short term, and that would be the end of that. But did we do that? That would have cost a lot less money, and we wouldn't have had to. But second of all, you know, we went in there, and I know that you can take – there are 3 clauses that allow the president to go in and do something like this. The news kept reporting that, oh, he's got 60 days and 90 days if the Congress doesn't take action. Yeah, but
we weren't in imminent danger.
Yeah. So
right?
Here are the 3 things that he has to meet under the War Powers Resolution. Number 1, a declaration of war. Well, there was no declaration of war. He can get specific statutory authorization, just like George Bush did and Bill Clinton and on, from the Congress without declaring war, but to go in. And he didn't get that. And finally, a national emergency created by an attack upon the United States, its territories, possessions, or its armed forces. It doesn't say a potential or possible future attack. It says a attack now. And none of that occurred. So he violated his oath of office. He violated the War Powers Resolution, and he violated the Constitution.
I agree with you. I agree with you. I mean, it didn't, you know, as soon as I heard they were going in, I said, what is going on here? I haven't heard anybody talk about this. I haven't heard Congress talk about it. It didn't make any sense to me that we were going in Libya at that time. It's just, for me, it's a waste of money. I don't know if you know this, but back in 1999, I was writing the ATO, the air tasking order for the no-fly zone for Southern Watch for the Southern Iraq. And once you set up a no-fly zone, you're constant patrols in there. Even if there aren't any targets, even if intelligence comes out and you don't have any targets, you're still flying in there. It's not like you sit around. You're still spending money.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, a lot of money. Oh, man. So, that's – people think, well, okay, the fuel of the jets. And, of course, if these jets are coming from carriers, which it is in Libya, the cost to the carrier to run a flight operation of launching aircraft and recovering aircraft is astronomical. It's huge. It's not just the fuel of the jets. And then, of course, every time you fly a jet, you know, there's things that are going to go a little bit wrong. They're going to need some repair work and on. Boy, I just saw something in the news today that it looks like what the administration told us was actually costing us to do this was not the right number. I can't even imagine that it wasn't the right number. It's got to be a whole lot more than what they're talking about. All of those cruise missiles, all the flying we did, the aircraft carriers, the ships involved, they're saying $500 million now. It's got to be a couple billion at least. But we'll eventually get the right numbers. What a waste of money right now. So
And Gaddafi's a peon. He already gave up his weapons of mass destruction. And as far as humanitarian is concerned, absolutely. I mean, there's something that needed to be done about it. But, I mean, I don't think this needed to be. From our end, from where we stand as far as our debt is concerned, it didn't have to be done for over Gaddafi.
Yeah, Yeah. Well, and this is where politics, and you've heard me talk about this before, but I really get upset when politics trump the lives of our soldiers. And how it did it in this case, I mean, I guess we haven't lost any lives, but what happens is, if you talk to a liberal and say, well, why is it we went in there? Oh, because, you know, humanitarian reasons to save lives, you know, sub-net, no-fly zone. Okay, that sounds great. But what's the real purpose of going in there and saving those lives versus going to some other country? Well, Gaddafi's a really bad guy, on and on. Okay, so what's the ultimate goal here? And they'll eventually get around to admitting the ultimate goal is to see Gaddafi gone. Well, if that's the ultimate goal, we could have killed him the first day. He would have been gone. But, oh, no, you can't kill him. That's right. We have to risk our soldiers' lives for weeks and months and whatever this ends up turning into because we can't kill him. But that's the goal, is to get rid of him. It's ludicrous. It's the stupidest thing in the world. I guarantee you, if George Patton were here right now, he'd be like, you know, just shaking his head saying, this is not how you run a military operation. But anyway, that's what it turned into. Our military operations have become political operations that the military is supporting, and that's where we lose all these lives needlessly, and it really kind of ticks me off. But anyway, let's move on to something else. You talked about your Northeast Uniting America tour, and that's going to be from June 27th to August 4th. You've still got some dates available for booking. Tell people once again what the tour is about and how they can get a hold of you to book you for one of your speaking engagements.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, like I mentioned before, the mission of the NAACP is to end identity politics, thereby creating a colorblind society. And with the presentation that I had put together, I noticed that it was affecting a lot of people, not only conservatives, but it was affecting independents and also liberals, and especially people of color who had never heard any of this information. You got to understand that when I started researching this, and I was a liberal Democrat, I decided after a short amount of time to drop my party affiliation with the Democratic Party and become an independent. And it took me about a year after I became an independent to finally become a Republican, and to go back what I considered go back home to the party that I was supposed to originally be associated with. And so this presentation helps basically unite people by telling them the truth. The truth that nobody else has ever told them. And so the presentation I wanted to take up to the Northeast, because I've spent a lot of time down in Florida and a little bit throughout the country speaking too, and I especially wanted to take it up to the Northeast area to where liberals really are and hang out, because I guarantee you they don't know any of this information. I want them to see what this country is really supposed to be about. How they've been bamboozled into thinking that their liberal policies are the great policies for America, because not only is it killing or destroying the minority community in the United States of America, minority communities, quote unquote, as far as I'm concerned, are American communities. So you're hurting Americans. I mean, you're literally hurting Americans with liberal policies. So the purpose of the tour is to go out to the Northeast, talk to these people, and try to get them on our side. But like I said, I've mentioned this before, that every person of color, every single person of color that has listened to this presentation has been converted. They've either decided to leave the Democratic Party or they said, man, we've been voting for the wrong party. We're going to change the way we vote.
Well, you know, I've got to tell people, I've seen your presentation, the shorter version, a couple times, and when I'm there and there are people that have not seen it, I look at their faces and they are mesmerized. And I know that even your three-hour presentation, they're mesmerized for the whole thing. Nobody leaves. And I, the reaction afterwards, I just see people looking at each other and going, wow, I had no idea. And you get cheers throughout the presentation. And there's some humor and other stuff. But people really need to know this. I absolutely agree. I wish there was a way that I could help promote you a little bit more. I certainly will. We'll talk about it later. But you give me some kind of ad copy that we can put on the website and as well run some airtime ads. But I want to do a little shouting out now to some of the people that have supported you and recognize some of those folks. The Seminole Republican Women's Club in Seminole County, Florida. I know the Titusville Patriots. I was one of the first people to join that group. Don Ford is the head of that organization, and they're right there in Titusville, Florida, across from the Kennedy Space Center. America's Prosperity. We've got, let's see, who else is pretty good here? The Ocala Tea Party in Ocala, Florida. Greater Celebration GOP, and the Brevard County School Curriculum Board, Fox News with Brett Baer. I know you've been on his show and others. Is there anybody in particular you'd like to shout out to or recognize for their support?
I've got people all across the country that are helping out, and it's been fantastic. I have the message has a fantastic following, and that's what's important to me. I've got some Debbie Wilson down in Tampa, Florida, and her husband Jeff have been fantastic. Every time I go down to Tampa, they're always there to help me out and pick me up and take care of things for me. Tom and Carol Hayes out in Greater Celebration, Florida. They've been fantastic. They're the ones that helped me get in contact with Alveda King and connect with her. And there's just a myriad of people that are just fantastic. I couldn't. The list would be absolutely too long. Bob Root, Neil Rice, on and on. There are people all over the state that I've connected with, and most of them I almost talk to every single day. I'm on my phone all the time. But the reason I think is because, you know, people get upset that they've never heard this before, that their school system has dropped the ball and they never share this information with them. And when I explain to them that the reason the information is not shared is because 100 years ago they didn't want people to know that America was a great nation because of because of XYZ. They wanted to push the United States of America in a progressive way, and the way they had to do that was to limit certain information from getting out. And it's been generations now that this information has not gotten out. So once I get an opportunity to share it with every walk of life, from high schoolers all the way up to, you name it, 80, 90-year-olds that have been in my presentation, they're just shocked that this basic, very basic knowledge is not part of our school curriculum. And if it were part of the school curriculum, it would absolutely make a difference in how we see the United States of America. You and I, Tom, already see the United States as an exceptional nation. It is an exceptional nation. Once you hear this information about the Founding Fathers, about the Constitution, about the fight during the Civil War, about these amendments, about how the things have, certain things have been hiding from us, you get to understand that it's not just an exceptional nation. It literally is the example for the world of why freedom is important.
Well, I agree, absolutely. Now, let me ask you this. You've done webinars in the past. Are you still doing those?
I've stopped doing those webinars. It's got a little bit too time intensive. I'm on the road quite often now. But soon we're going to be coming out with, in about 6 months or so, we'll be coming out with a DVD for the presentation, for the short version, just to whet people's appetites. And we also have what's called the Uniting America Tour, which is different than the Northeastern Tour. The Uniting America Tour is if people want me to come out to a particular location, we can do a wine and cheese event at a theater. I did that last December in Orlando and had a fantastic time. About 100 of our closest friends came out, and we had a great time with the wine and cheese and book signing and everything. I'm available to do just about anything, but like I said, it will be coming out. And I also have another version of a Stolen History. I'm going to put out another book here sometime this year, and it'll be a little bit bigger book. It might be a little bit bigger book than the one that I have now. There's a lot of information that I could not include in this book that I will put into my second book, just because there's just so much stuff out there. And guys, just hang out for that.
That's great. I'm looking on the news right now, and I just saw something really important, that if the government does shut down, the Cherry Blossom Festival is going to be canceled.
Oh no.
That's going to be terrible.
Oh, no.
So, all right, well, listen, hey, if in the future you have an event in Central Florida and you're interested in having somebody come there and I can broadcast live from location, we can even just do some interviews and film and that kind of stuff. And, of course, that'll go on my website, but then you can put it on yours as well to help promote the cause. Is there one thing that, since you got involved in this, that you would say is the most important thing you've learned? Not the research about stolen history, but is there anything you've learned, whether it be politics, the way our government runs at the state or federal level, or anything else, human nature? Is there any one thing that's really stood out in this whole process that you've learned?
Yeah, the one thing that I've realized is that if we do not go back to our founding documents, this country is doomed. That is a fact. And the fight is intense. I'll tell you that the Department of Education here in the state of Florida has decided, their curriculum department has decided to start American history, in bulk American history, from 1865 on. And I believe that's an attack not only on our founding fathers and the founding documents, but it's an attack on the foundation of the United States of America. That is the one thing that is shocking to me, that after realizing how important those documents are, there are people out there that are literally every single day trying to tear away at the foundation of America.
Absolutely. Well, you remember what my platform was from day one of my congressional race, and it was that we have a roadmap to success and for the future, and it's called the Constitution. And
there
weren't too many people talking about the Constitution back then, but it's become a more hip thing, and because mainly, not just because it's hip, but because people are beginning to realize we have a federal government that was built around this document. It has a certain structure, and it's not capable of doing the things that it's being asked to do today, and it doesn't do them well at all. We need to return to the states handling social and civil issues and let the federal government do what it does best, protect our nation.
Yeah, absolutely. And if the federal government got out of this stuff, if the federal government got out of it, all that excess and waste, that is really excess and waste because they're not supposed to be doing it, will go away, and it would get picked up by the states. Once it gets picked up by the states, guess who goes back to work? Us. We get to go back to work. The 11.4% that Florida is the unemployment rate would start to go down because the federal government would relinquish what they consider to be their duties, and it would fall upon the states, and then the states, not the states' governments, but we probably privatize half the stuff that they're doing.
Well, now, let's take a look at Arizona, for example. The federal government says, listen, it's our job to protect the borders, you can't. Now, do you know of any place in the Constitution that says that the states can't do the same thing the federal government is doing? You know, the Tenth Amendment simply says if the federal government isn't authorized to do it and the states aren't prohibited, then the states can do it. But it doesn't say, well, if the federal government is doing it and has that as an enumeration, then the states can't. For example, we have state taxes, just like, and their income taxes. So there are lots of things that the states do that the federal government does. There should be no limitation on it. I have no idea how the federal government can say, we're going to control the border and secure it. You can't.
No, and that makes no sense because even though they quote-unquote share a border, the federal border and the state border, they're basically at the same spot, it's still, equally shared by the state, and the state has a responsibility to protect its citizens. And if they feel like they're being invaded upon, they have that responsibility to protect their borders. And not only a responsibility, or in my opinion, a requirement to protect their borders against what they consider to be an invasion. If you've got people coming into the country that are murderers, drug dealers, and rapists, and they're, and I'm not saying all of them are, obviously, but you also have people that are coming over illegally. They're not part of the system, legal part of the system. Then you have to do something about it. They're required. Something about it by elected officials.
Right. And, the Constitution does say that the federal government guarantees to each and every state protection from invasion, and they've absolutely failed in that regard. And it's not just this president. It's been failing in that regard for a long, long time, but we need to fix that. Now, I just see that Chuck Schumer has said that the Senate will never, never, never. He said three nevers. So that's Mr. Extremist Chuck Schumer. That's how he operates as an extremist. Will defund Planned Parenthood. I have an answer for him, and that is, Mr. Schumer, we're going to get rid of you, and when we take back the Senate, then we absolutely will. And I don't know that he's right either. I think that if there is a bill that defunds Planned Parenthood, it just may get through anyway, because there's going to be a lot of pressure on some of those Blue Dog Democrats to go along with that from their constituents. So what do you think about that?
Yeah, I talk about deep Planned Parenthood in my presentation. I talk about Margaret Sanger and their vision of exterminating, quote-unquote, exterminating the Negro population, called the Negro Project. She wrote that letter to Clarence Gamble of the Procter & Gamble fame. And, people don't understand, don't realize that when the House defunded, quote-unquote, voted to defund Planned Parenthood, they're still getting $1 million a day, $1 million a day for an organization that's already profitable of grant money that they're getting from us. The other thing that is really, this is Ma'afa 2-1, if you've ever seen that, it's called Black Genocide. It's literally taking storm all across the country, and it's making a difference. People are starting to realize, especially in the black community, they're starting to understand what these guys had planned for, quote unquote, for Black America. And as people start to awaken to these facts, you will definitely see a shift, a change in attitudes against Planned Parenthood, as far as I'm concerned. 500,000 Black babies a year are aborted. 500,000. And I make the analogy. I say, listen, we can't, rightfully so, can't stand or hate the KKK. They lynched 4,000 people, approximately. A third of those people were white. Two-thirds of them were Black. 4,000. Compare that to 500,000 Black babies a year. So the tune, I think, right now is 13 to 13.5 million Black babies so far. Come on. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous and sickening.
It is. It's absolutely sickening. And I heard today on one of the radio shows that in New York, the percentage of abortions that are performed in New York, 60% are owned by the Black community. It's actually over 60%. And that's just that's just ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. Part of my presentation, too, I talk about, I tell people that, you know, in our school systems, we don't study slave laws. Now, you and I and the Tea Party, the 912ers, and as conservatives, we fight for more individual freedom, i.e., we fight against tyranny, against the overgrowth of government. Now, one of the problems that I have is we don't study slave laws in school. And I say, if you don't study slave laws in school, how are kids, or how are we ever supposed to know or see the signs of tyranny coming down at us or coming towards us? And we don't, and that's what's happened in the last 30 to 40 years, is we just did not recognize this growth of government, this tyranny coming down upon us. One of the slave laws I like to cover is the one that says that basically if your mother was a slave, then you will be born as a slave. If your mother was free, then you will be born free. Now, I get people to understand that this is a tyrannical law. Understand that it says that your worth, your value is determined by somebody else, by another entity or another person before you're even born. Understand that it's the most basic of slave laws, which determined, that organized slavery, that established slavery in the states, said that you will be a slave because I say you're going to be a slave. That is the same thing as abortion. In other words, your value or your worth is determined not by God, not by you, but by an outside entity before you're even born.
Yeah, that's, my gosh, yeah. You know, when I used to do my consulting work, I talked about something similar to what your book is about, trying to expose history so we know where we can go and how we can succeed in the future. But I used to say that if you're on a ship and you're trying to get somewhere, and you're told, okay, we need to get to New York City. Oh, okay, here we go. Well, which way do you turn? You don't know where to turn until you know where you're at. And today, knowing where we're at is based on how we got here. And so there are too many people that just want to press ahead. Oh, yeah, we're going to go here. They don't really know where they're going. And so I think it's really, really important for the future of us as American citizens, as well as our children, to know where we came from accurately and how we got here, whether it be a book like yours or even just reading the Constitution and the history of the Constitution. It's very, very enlightening, and as you said earlier, you've converted a lot of liberals, and I can't imagine any liberal coming to see your presentation except somebody who's fooling themselves and a hypocrite, not believing and understanding what conservatism really is about. So, Franz, I appreciate you coming on the show. I didn't take any calls today because we had so much stuff to talk about. We'll have you back. And I know that I told you that if you want to do a guest host here, even if you want to have your own show on an infrequent basis, I know you're a really busy guy, but I know that people would love to listen to you do a whole hour show on your own. So think about that. But we will have you back. And if you have something in the future that you think is important and you want to, get on some radio stations and get information out. The good thing about this show is, we archive it, and I'll be sending out email blasts and other things to everybody about, hey, great show. We talked about some great information. Don't miss it. So it's continued promotion for your efforts, and we look forward to having you back. Thanks for coming on today, Franz. Any last things you'd like to tell the people, and definitely tell them where they can connect with you, where they can get your book and find out more information.
Yeah, absolutely. FranzCabreau.com. You can connect with me there. You can get the book both there and also at StolenHistory.com. StolenHistory.com. And if you are part of a group, part of any group, 912, Tea Party, conservative, liberal, I don't care, church, contact me. With this information needs to be shared. I will come out there. I will share that information with your group or organization. We'll have a fantastic time. Get in touch with me on the website, franscarborough.com, and just fill out the form, and we'll get it going.
Awesome. Thanks, Franz. Well, good luck with your travels, and keep up the good work. We'll be in touch soon, and thanks for coming on today. And say hello to your
thank you very much. Thanks,
all
Tom. You too. Take it easy. Bye-bye.
All right, we got a couple minutes left here. I'm going to talk about one thing very briefly that was in the news today, and it's about the dollar. And this headline comes from CNBC, believe it or not. It says, toxic dollar, why nobody seems to want U.S. currency. Gee, why doesn't anybody want the U.S. currency? Because we've been printing so much of it and it's worthless? Yeah, so here's pretty much the gist of the story. Traders are warning of a dramatic change in dollar selling. They fear central banks in the Middle East. And what is it? We're doing all this stuff to try and help out the Middle East, right? But these central banks in the Middle East may force their Asian rivals to more aggressively drive the dollar down. Wow, all of our best friends over in Asia and the Middle East. It says too many dollars. In 10 months, the dollar index has lost 14% because the world keeps accumulating dollars it doesn't want. Did you hear that? Doesn't want, and sells them. Asian central banks are key. Now, when we say Asian central banks, are we maybe referring to China? Yeah. I don't think Japan's going to be doing anything to hurt us right now. They're kind of busy with other things right now. But and, of course, you go on in the article, then they start mentioning China a bit more. Asia-Pacific banks are renowned for their strict diversification. They hold a level with China in order to be competitive. Beyond that, it's very strict ratios. They need to swap out of dollars. So I bet you know what's coming next. I'm going to tell you that I want you to invest in Goldline or gold or something else. No, I don't have a sponsor that is a gold company or anything like that, and I'm not making any recommendation what you do. But start talking. If you have a financial planner or somebody else, start taking a look at that, taking a look at where your money is invested. If you have some investments and you may want to make some changes or some slight changes, you may want to. You may not. Okay, that's just something to think about. But we've seen this coming for some time. And, of course, the liberals and the Democrats, they don't see anything wrong with just printing more and more money. And, of course, that's how we've got to get ourselves out of debt. Last thing is I want to try and find out if Nancy Pelosi voted for this continuing resolution and if she plans to vote for the bill for 2011 that the Republicans are proposing. She could have proposed a bill back when she was still in power, but didn't, and she certainly didn't ensure that we had a budget for 2010. But I'm interested to find out if she is going to vote for the Republican bill so that she can find out what's in it. All right, everybody, thanks for joining us today. I'm Tom Garcia. This is the American Hour on the USA Talk Radio Network. I'll be back on Monday at 4 p.m., and we've got a great guest on Monday. It's Paul Skousen, son of the famed Cleon Skousen, author of The 5,000-Year Leap. And if you haven't seen that book, you're not familiar with it, wow, it tells you all about how we got our Constitution, the process our founders went through, why, and why they chose the enumerations that they put in it. And I'm going to be giving a couple of those away to lucky callers in on Monday. Sorry to take any calls today, but we just, with a guy like Franz Cabreau, there's just too much stuff to cover. And we'll have to take calls on Monday so we get some books away. So don't miss that. This Monday, 4 p.m. Eastern, Paul Skousen, he was also served in the CIA as a CIA officer, intelligence officer, worked in the Reagan administration, and knows a little bit about the secret papers that got snuck out of the White House from that belonged to Ollie North. So don't miss that. Great having you here today, and have a wonderful weekend.